Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Amud Aleph, six lines down. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. It happens to affect a number of items here, one of which is what was the size of the Mizbeach and the Choshet of Moshe Rabbeinu. As we discussed yesterday, Rabbi Yossi believes that the Gzeir Shava connects the Mizbeach and the Choshet with the Mizbeach HaZahav. The Mizbeach HaZahav, the height is two times the length or the width. And so do, with regards to the Mizbeach and the Choshet, the height should be two times the length of the width. The Torah says that the square area of the top of the Mizbeach is 5 by 5. So if it's going to be twice that amount, it's going to be 10 amot high. For that reason, Rabbi Yossi has a narrow but tall Mizbeach and the Choshet. It is 5 by 5 on the top area. That is 10 amot off the ground. The other hand, Rabbi Yehuda uses the Rabua to teach us the size of the Maracha. He compares it to the case in Yechezkel, which tells us that they measured from the center rather than from the sides. And that makes it that the 5 by 5 is not the total area of the Maracha. It's only half the area of the Maracha. The Maracha is really 10 by 10 wide. But then he takes the pasuk about the height literally, which means that the Mizbeach is only 3 amot high. And so therefore he has a very wide but short Mizbeach and Nechoshet. That's also impacted their view with regards to what happened in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech runs into a problem where he's makdish the whole chatzer. Rabbi Yehuda takes that very literally. The pasuk in Melachim that Shlomo HaMelech was makdish the chatzer or the azara to allow for the overflow of korbanot. That derives from his position with regards to Mizbeach and the Choshet, because the Mizbeach and the Choshet was able to take a large volume, and then compared to the Mizbeach in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, he couldn't bring the 142,000 korbanot on that Mizbeach. So he's makdish the area around it. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, who has a much smaller Mizbeach Nechoshet, the ratio worked out that if you could put 1,000 on the Mizbeach Nechoshet, clearly could handle 142,000 on the Mizbeach of Anim, that was in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. So he believes that, not that the Azarah was Mukdash, but rather the Pasuk in Melachim that tells us that the Mizbeach was too small, was speaking about the Mizbeach Nechoshet, and speaking to the retirement of the Mizbeach Nechoshet, and then the Mizbeach Avanim. Now the Gemara is going to explicate on what we just discussed. Bishlam al Rabbi Yehuda Hainu Dichtiv Kidash. That, according to Rabbi Yehuda, makes sense that Shlomo HaMelech was Makdish the Azara. That's why it says Kidash, that he was sanctifying the whole area, because it's exactly what he did. He said that because there was not enough room on the Mizbeach, he was Makdish the Azara, and he brought the korbanot there. El Rabbi Yossi, my kiddush, what did he sanctify? According to Rabbi Yossi, he didn't add anything on. They used the Mizbeach Avanim, and they just took the Mizbeach Nechoshet out of service. What was he sanctifying? Lamid ba Mizbeach. The answer is that the Mizbeach, or the expanded Mizbeach, requires a larger footprint now. So he's makdish that larger footprint, or that area, to be the Azarah, in order to contain the new, larger Mizbeach. And so that's what the pasuk means when it says kidash bishlam Rabbi Yossi hainu tichtiv katan. I understand what the pasuk means when it says katan was katan me'achil. It was too small to take on the korbanot that needed to be brought. That's a reference to the mizbeach hanechoshet. So in referencing to the mizbeach hanechoshet, it says it's too small, and they went in to put it into retirement. El Rabbi Yehuda, my katan. Why is it small? Hachi kamar. Mizbeach Avanim, Shasa Shlomo, Tachat Mizbeach Nechoshet, Katan Hu. The Mizbeach Avanim that Shlomo HaMelech made, that replaced the Mizbeach Nechoshet, was too small. Now that is somewhat difficult reading of the Pasuk, because the Pasuk in Melachim Aleph Perchet says, Bayomahu Kidash HaMelech Etoka Chatzer, Asher Lifnei Beit Hashem, Kesa Shem Et Ola Vet Mincha Vet Chalvei Ashlamim, Ki Mizbeach Nechoshet, Asher Lifnei Hashem, Katon me'achil et ha'olav et mincha et chalvei ha'shlamim. So the pasuk specifically says that the mizbeach ha'nechoshet is the one that is too small. For Rabbi Yossi, that's exactly what the pasuk means. The mizbeach ha'nechoshet is too small, you're taking it out of service. But for Rabbi Yehuda, the mizbeach ha'nechoshet isn't even the topic here. What was too small was the mizbeach avanim of Shlomo HaMelech, which is still in service, but it was too small to handle, and therefore they were makdish the azara. So how can you say it's mizbeach ha'nechoshet asher lifnei Hashem katon me'achil? It wasn't the mizbeach ha'nechoshet that was too small, it was the mizbeach avanim that was too small. So the Gemara's answer is that the mizbeach avanim, which replaced the mizbeach ha'nechoshet, that was too small. That's a somewhat forced reading or typical reading of the pasuk, except for the fact that in Divrei Yamim, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, it says Vayas mizbach nechoshet. Shlomo HaMelech makes a copper mizbeach, esrima marako, esrima marachbo, 20 by 20, ve'eser amot, komado, and 10 high, which is actually the measurement of the mizbeach havanim of Shlomo HaMelech. So there, either you have to say that in Divrei Yamim is a reference to the mizbeach havanim, because that's exactly the size of the mizbeach havanim that Shlomo HaMelech built. And so what you're saying is that even though in Divrei Yamim it calls it Mizbeach Nechoshet, it's clearly speaking about the Mizbeach of Anim, and actually would be supportive of the way that we're explaining Rabbi Yehuda now. And that is quoted by Rashi over here. Mushum dekoy b'makom Mizbeach Nechoshet. Since it's replacing the Mizbeach Nechoshet, v'chilufohu, it is the replacement, kari le Mizbeach Nechoshet. It calls it Mizbeach Nechoshet, and as Rashi quotes the pasuk from Divrei Yamim, you see that the Mizbeach of Shlomo is called Mizbeach Nechoshet, even though it wasn't the Mizbeach Nechoshet. It becomes the terminology for the Mizbeach Chitzon, even though it's not made out of copper. The other possibility is what you are suggesting, which is that even the Mizbeach of Shlomo Melech, that was a Mizbeach of Anim, was coated in copper. There are some Mefarshei Mikra that want to suggest that it was a Mizbeach Nechoshet, but it was built out of Avanim, and then covered with Nechoshet, as opposed to the Mizbeach Nechoshet, which was made out of wood and then covered with Nechoshet. This was made out of stone and then covered with Nechoshet. So there is a possibility that it was made out of Nechoshet. That seems a little more far-fetched, because the Mizbeach really turns into Mizbeach Avanim once they build it into a permanent structure. And we're going to see in a second, that's one of the key differences between the Mizbeach Nechoshet and Mizbeach Avanim, is that the Mizbeach Nechoshet is a kli, and the Mizbeach Avanim is part of the Binyan. That's a kli difference, so therefore you would assume that the Mizbeach of Shlomo HaMelech, which is part of the Binyan, was made out of Avanim and not Nechoshet at all. But it is possible that it was plated with Nechoshet, and that's the explanation for it. But for that reason, Rashi says that, as far-fetched as it sounds, it's not so ridiculous to assume that the Mizbeach Nechoshet here is really a reference to the Mizbeach Avanim, because we find evidence of that in Divrei Yamim, that the Mizbeach Avanim takes on the name of the Mizbeach Nechoshet, or in essence, that becomes the terminology for the Mizbeach HaChitzon, despite the fact that it's no longer made out of Nechoshet. And therefore, when it says here, it's Katan Me'achil, the Mizbeach Nechoshet, that could be a reference to the Mizbeach Avanim, and then that would explain Kidash HaMelech Etoch HaChatzer, that we mentioned before for Rabbi Yehuda. We understand why it says Kidash, because Kidash Et HaChatzer, or the Azarah, because the Mizbeach couldn't handle it. For Rabbi Yossi, that was a harder issue. Why does it say Kidash? And then we said that he was Mekadesh, the footprint, which is a larger area to put in the new Mizbeach. The Gemara says, but my pligot, what do they argue about? What do Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi argue about? It's pretty clear what they argue about, the size of the Mizbeach and the Choshet. But what is the essence of that machloket? My sabar danim chutz michutz. Rabbi Yehuda believes that you learn a Mizbeach chitzon from Mizbeach chitzon. Mizbeach Chitzon in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, but the Mizbeach Chitzon that is mentioned by Yechezkel. And so therefore you come to the conclusion that it is 10 by 10 the Maracha and 3 Amot high the Mizbeach and the Choshet. Ve'edanim Chutz Mibifnim. You can't learn the Mizbeach Chitzon from the Mizbeach HaZahav. Umar Tzavar Danim Kli Mikli. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi favors learning a Kli from a Kli. The Mizbeach HaZahav is a Kli. The Mizbeach and the Choshet is a Kli. They are movable objects. They are items that were described as kelim or kelei hamikdash, and they had the possibility of being transported or moved. So they are kelim. So I've learned mizbeach and the kosher mizbeach zahav to tell me the height of the mizbeach. And I'm not going to learn the mizbeach nechoshet from the mizbeach of Yechezkel, which is a reference to a mizbeach avanim or mizbeach that is considered to be a binyan, to the mizbeach nechoshet, which is a kli. So that's their machloket. What is the focus of the comparison? Is the focus of the comparison where you are located? Or is the focus on the comparison the nature of the mizbeach? And so that machloket precipitates their different views as to what the size of the mizbeach nechoshet is. And then that precipitates their interpretation of the pasuk in Melachim Aleph, Perchet, pasuk Samach Dalet, as to what it means that it was kidash et hachatzer, as well as what it means katan me'achil, that it was too small. So Amar Rova, Moder Rabbi Yehuda, Bidamim. This goes back to how we actually got into the sugya, which was Rav made a statement that if the Mizbeach is Nifgam, any Kodeshim that are shechted during that period of time are Psulim. The Gemara said, is that really true? We have evidence of the fact that when the Mizbeach HaKitoret is missing, you can put the Ketoret there even though the Mizbech HaZahav is not there. The answer to that question was, Mode Rabbi Yehuda v'damim, so too Mode Rav v'damim. Just like Rabbi Yehuda believes that damim have to go on the Mizbech, so too Rav believes damim have to go on the Mizbech. The answer to the question was, the ability to be makriv or do haktara is independent of the Mizbech. But the ability to put damim is not necessarily independent of the Mizbech. That means for Rabbi Yehuda over here, who says that kidash et hachatzer, Shlomo HaMelech was mikadesh the entire Azarah to use as a Mizbeach, and to be makriv korbanot, that was true with regards to the fact that you can be makriv the korban, you can do a haktara anywhere in the chatzer, anywhere in the Azarah. On the other hand, with regards to damim, the dam that needs to go on the Mizbeach, that can only go on the Mizbeach. You can't just sprinkle dam anywhere you want inside the Azarah and say, oh, I got it to the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is required for the damim, it's not required for the haktara. That is the bifurcation of the din. That bifurcation that exists there also exists by the Mizbeach HaKetoret. The absence of the Mizbeach HaKetoret allows you to do Haktarat HaKetoret, to place the Torah there. What it does not allow is either the Damim from the Chatorah Pnimiyot to be done without a Mizbeach Zahav, or you can't extrapolate to the Mizbeach Chitzon and say the Damim can be done when there's no Mizbeach there. You require a Mizbeach for Damim. So that's why you don't have a stira in Rav's statements. When Rav says the Mizbeach Nifgam, and therefore if you shech the animals there, Psulim, that's because we're speaking there about the damim. And the damim require mizbeach. The other hand, we're talking about the ketoret, the mizbeach could be missing and you can still do the ketoret, because there you're speaking about haktara, you're not speaking about damim. So that's what Rava says here, mode Rabbi Yehuda b'damim. Rabbi Yehuda agrees over here that even though they would sanctify the entire azara, that doesn't help you for the damim. It helps you for haktarat, our korbanot. It does not help you with the placement of the damim on the mizbeach. That must be done on the mizbeach ha-chitzon. The Tanya, and I'll prove it to you, this is a bright that we saw earlier in the Masechta. Rabbi Omer, Kosechad haya mimalei midam ha-tarovot, tarovot, v'shofcho al-gabei mizbeach. This is speaking about the Korban of Pesach. On the day they did the Korban of Pesach, there were incredibly large volumes being processed, and the fear was that some of the dam that was collected at that time spilled and didn't get to the mizbeach. So what Rabbi Yehuda suggests is at the end of the day, they take a cup full of the dam that's on the ground, on the floor, and they use that cup and they do a shpicha dam, one shpicha dam to the mizbeach, in order to capture any possibility of dam being spilt on the floor. So that helps you to solve the problem. This is, as we saw earlier in the Masechta back in Dam Adalad Amibet, that this is reviewed to the Shita To, who says that ain dam evatel dam. Dam is not batel bero, we're not batel another dam. That means that the existence of the dam is helpful. Number two is that the dam has to be spilt after they did Kabbalat the dam, not directly for the animal, because then there's no rectifying the situation. If the dam went straight to the floor, then you can't put that on Mizbeach. On the other hand, if you captured the dam and spilled it, then you can do that, and that's what Rabbi Yehuda is suggesting, that it's dam that's being picked up from that which was spilled. In addition, he makes it clear that there's a possibility of that dam being there. Meaning that, how do you know the dam is dam that's spilled directly from the animal? Maybe the dam is dam that's spilled from a cup. So therefore, to be safe, we take one cup of dam, and we throw it to the mizbeach. Shem, ishafech, damo, shalachat mehem. If one of the korbanei ha-pesach that was processed, their dam had spilled, nimsa ze machshiro. This will take care of the problem. If you think, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the entire azara is kodesh, haitavidale mitzvatei. The mitzvah was already done. They spilled it on the floor. Well, spilling on the floor is no different than spilling on the Mizbeach if you think that damim work anywhere in the Azarah just like they work on the Mizbeach. So why bother to pick it up and put it on the Mizbeach when it already hit the floor and you're done? V'dilma, shum dekasavar, shpicha mikoach adam, de'inan. First of all, that's not necessarily a good answer because shpichat adam on the Mizbeach might require an individual to actually do it. It may not be that if it's spilled, consider it or classify it as being shfichat damim legabei mizbeach. So even if you were to believe that the entire azara was ra'oi ledamim, the entire azara could be used for not only the haktarat chalavim, but even for the shfichat adam, that is true if you did intentionally shfichat adam. If you were carrying the utensil with the dam and it spilled, that doesn't mean that you did shfichat damim on the mizbeach or on the makom kadosh. You can't prove anything from that. Im kein nishkalei v'nishbechlei aduchtei. So then, Mara says, okay, let's assume you are correct. that we can't prove anything from the fact that you're scooping up the dam to spill it, because maybe you're right, it was spilled unintentionally. And since it was spilled unintentionally, it doesn't garner the status of being shvichut damim on the mizbeach. Even though the chatzer or the azarah could classify as mizbeach, doesn't qualify here because it was spilled unintentionally. This also is indicative of the fact that there probably is a problem mitasek with regards to kodeshim, not just in shechita, but in anything here, because here, what was spilled accidentally, it still isn't good, even though you're being mitasek in the kodeshim. Although, there are those that disagree with that deal, but nevertheless, that's what it seems to be here. But given that, you would still require a new shvichutam. Gemara says, okay, we accept that. You need a new shvichutam. So pick up the cup and dump it in the spot. Why do you have to go to the mizbeach? Just dump it where you are. Why does Rabbi Yehuda insist that you take it to the mizbeach? Must be that he thinks that you can't dump it on the spot. You got to take it to the mizbeach. Gemara says, "V'doma mishum dvina mitzvah mina muvchar." Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's better to put the dam on the mizbeach than to put it on the floor of the azara. So if I have a choice of picking it up from the floor and dumping it right on the floor, picking it up from the floor and taking it to the mizbeach, I'm obviously going to give preference to putting it on the mizbeach. Even if you believe it's good enough to do it on the floor of the azara, that's still not the primary way that we'd want to accomplish this mitzvah, and therefore you can't prove anything from the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, the Gabay, the Korbanei Pesach, as to whether he believes that the mizbeach status that extends beyond the mizbeach to the azara includes the damim, or does not include the damim. You can't prove it from here, because even if he believed the damim was good, we'd still make you pick it up, because it fell in unintentionally, and we'd still make you take it to the mizbeach, even though you could do it here, because the mizbeach is a better place than the floor of the azara. So we can't prove anything, even though the Gemara accepts the fact that Rabbi Yehuda is modeh b'damim, just we can't prove it from his position with regards to the Korban HaPesach. Nevertheless, we do believe that there is a difference between damim and haktara, and even if you believe that the mizbeach's status expanded to the whole azara, that will only be true by the gabe haktara, not true the gabe damim. Amar Rabbi Elazar, mizbeach shenifgam, ein ochlim bigino sherei mincha. If the mizbeach was damaged, you cannot eat as a result of that the sharei mincha, which basically means the kodshei kodeshim, which the kohanim have to eat. This ruins it for them. As opposed to Rav's statement before, which was addressing the shechitata korban, and saying that if you shech the korban when the mizbeach is nifgam, the korban is disqualified, problematic, and then it's dichoy, and the fact that it's dichoy, you can't then bring it back into service. How it's dichoy, or what the exact problem was, we discussed yesterday, whether it's the shechita itself, or it's the inability to do the zrikat damim, but there you have dichoy, and then the korban is disqualified and can't be brought again. What Rabbi Elazar says is that disqualification is not just about the shechitat ha-korban, not just about the zrikat ha-dam of the korban, but even about the achilat ha-korban. The kohanim's ability to eat the korban is also connected to the mizbeach itself. And therefore, if the mizbeach is out of service, they can't eat the kodshei kodoshim, even though you would have thought the two are independent, that they're not interrelated. When it comes to shechita, when it comes to the mizrikat ha-dam, you can understand why they're related. Shechita is a facilitator to get the dam in the mizbeach. Zrikat ha-dam requires mizbeach. So there's a problem with the mizbeach. You can understand why those would be disqualified. But here, the eating of the korban, what does it have to do with the mizbeach? That's post all the davodot that are done on the mizbeach. So why should it be the mizbeach is damaged that should disqualify eating the korban? Obviously, we're speaking about a case where the shechita and the zrikat were done when the mizbeach was intact. Otherwise, there's nothing to discuss. So they did everything properly. After that is all done properly, they were damaged to the mizbeach. Now they want to know, can they eat the kodeshim? Why not? There's no need for the mizbeach anymore. Shneamar, the pasuk says by the miluim, vayikra perek yud, pasuk yud bet, vayidaber Moshe v'Aaron v'Elazar v'Itamar b'nav notarim, k'chu et mincha noteret mishe Hashem, v'ichlua matzot eitzel ha-mizbeach, ki kodesh kodeshim hu. You have to eat the sharia mincha eitzel ha-mizbeach, next to the mizbeach. Did they have to really eat it next to the mizbeach? Meaning that they had to set up right around the mizbeach. Ela bizman shu shalim, velo bizman shu chaser. It means that when it is intact, not when it's missing. I mean, the right to eat the sharia mincha is in the entire chaser for them, or the entire azarah in the mikdash. There's no necessity to eat it right up against the mizbeach. So then why is the pasuk connected to the mizbeach? That's to tell you that it is a prerequisite for the ability to eat, is that the mizbeach must be intact. That means that if it's not intact, you can't eat the sharia mincha. We have to do something with the word etzel. The same way that we learned yesterday with regards to the word alav. That it says there, v'zavachta alav, you do the shechita on the mizbeach. Gemara says, you don't do shechita on the mizbeach. We did learn that there's a heter to do it if you need to or if it happens. But it doesn't mean the mitzvah, you'd want to do the shechita on the mizbeach. What does alav mean? Alav means because of it, bigino, or it is the facilitator of that ability. Gemara is doing the same thing here with etzel mizbeach. You can't take it literally etzel mizbeach. So what does it mean etzel mizbeach means? There's a correlation, there's a connection between what you're doing and the mizbeach. Etzel mizbeach is not in a physical sense, but in a more figurative sense that your etzel mizbeach. You need to have the mizbeach there in order to facilitate your ability to eat the korban. So that's the source for this fact. Now you would probably differentiate here between that which we sing here and that which Rav said, which is that when it comes to the shechita or the zrikat adam, there's a concept of nidche. That means once the mizbech is problematic and that creates a problem for the korban, it's disqualified forever. It's nidche, and then it can't be brought back to be non-nidche anymore because there was a disqualification. That's dichui in kodoshim. With regards to the eating of korban, we don't find such a concept of dichui. Dichui applies to the avodot of the kodoshim, not to the eating of the kodoshim, which would then mean if you solve the problem, you could eat the korban. So for instance, if the mizbech is nifgam, they can't eat while the mizbech is nifgam. If you fix the mizbech, then they could eat the kodoshim. As long as they haven't expired yet, they could eat it. It's not subject to dichui. That is, like the view of the Baal Tosafot in Boba Metzia, if you look in the Rebbe Kiva Eger, he tells you to look in the Tosafot in Boba Metzia, and he says, Ulachar shechazar v'nivneh. After it's rebuilt, then you can eat it. It's not disqualified after it's rebuilt. On the other hand, the Tosafot on Samach Aleph says that there is dichui by eating, and he claims that if even if you put it back together afterwards, that's not going to help you in this case. There's a stira in the Baalei Tosafot. The Rambam seems to follow the view of the Tosafot in Boba Metzia, which is that if you rebuild it, then it is fine. So that means that there's no dichui by eating of a korbanot. But then the Gemara says, okay, Ashkechan Sherei Mincha. The Pasuk in the Miluim is specifically stated with regards to the leftovers of the Mincha. And so there I see there's a requirement for Mizbeach. Kodshei Kodoshim Inolan. How do I know that other Kodshei Kodoshim are affected by this? Talmud Omar, the Pasuk says, at the end of the Pasuk, we read it, Etzel Mizbeach Ki Kodesh Kodoshim Hu. So Kodesh Kodoshim is a Gzeres Shavah. Anything that's called Kodshei Kodoshim will then be subject to this rule. We saw that already by the Chatat and the Asham, which are Korbanot that are eaten in the Azarah, that the word Kodshei Kodoshim appears by both of those. And so the Gzeres Shavah will tell you they have the same din as the Mincha, which means that they are tied into the structure of the Mizbeach, or the Mizbeach being whole, shalem, functioning, otherwise you can't eat the korbanot. It says, kochim kalim, minayin. How do we know that it's true by kochim kalim as well? If you have a lack of mizbeach, when there's a failure in the mizbeach, that you can't eat kochim kalim. Now this is a little more extensive because, at least with regards to the sharia minchan, the kochim kodeshim, they're eaten in the azarah, and so they are in the purview of the mizbeach. Kochim kalim can be eaten throughout Yerushalayim. They don't seem to be connected to the Mizbeach as tightly as Kodshei Kodoshim. So, Rabbi, Achemi Drosha de Rabbi Yossi. You can learn this out from the Drosha of Rabbi Yossi. Titania, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gimel Dvarim, Mishom, Gimel Zkenim. He has three different memorot that he brought in the name of three different Zkenim. V'zeachad mehem. This is one of those three items. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yechol Yale Adam, Maser Sheni Yerushalayim, Yochlenu B'mitzman Hazeh. A person would think that he takes up Maser Sheni today, goes up to Yerushalayim, and eats his Maaser Sheni inside of Yerushalayim. There are a number of assumptions over here. You can see that first one in Rashi, the second line in Rashi, which is, Yochol Yale Adam Maaser Sheni, Kasavar Kedushat Aretz Lo Betela. That he has to believe that the Kedushat Aretz was not nullified, or in essence, that there is still Kedushat Aretz. That's why you're Chayav in Maaser Sheni. Given that you're Chayav in Maaser Sheni, maybe you should take it up to Yerushalayim, and eat it in Yerushalayim. Because Maaser Sheni doesn't require the Mikdash in order to be processed. Maaser Sheni is just a requirement to be in the area of Yerushalayim. So if I can go to the area that was once Yerushalayim, should be able to consume Maaser Sheni today, based on the Kedushat Yerushalayim that once was, and the Kedushat Aris that still exists. Bedinu, Bechor Ta'un Havat Makom. Bechor is required to be brought up to Yerushalayim. That is a Bechor Tam. And Bechor Tam that's given to the Kohen has to be placed on the Mizbeach in order for the Kohen to get benefit from it afterwards. If it gets a mum in it, then it becomes chulin and the kohen can eat it even at home. Umaser ta'un habat makom. And maser also requires it be brought up to Yerushalayim. Ma b'chor enu elo b'fnei abayit. Just like b'chor is only applicable when the Beit HaMikdash is extant, af maser enu elo b'fnei abayit. So too, maser should only be brought to Yerushalayim. Or possibility of eating in Yerushalayim should only be available when the Beit HaMikdash is standing. Mar says, how can you make such an extension? How can you make a binyanav like that? Just because b'chor can't be brought when there's no Mikdash, who says maser sheni cannot be brought when there's no Mikdash? Because shekein ta'on matan damim ve'imurim legabei mizbeach. When it comes to the b'chor requires the Mikdash in order to be processed. It requires a mizbeach in order for it to be able to be eaten. You need matan damim, akhtarat chalavim on the mizbeach. That all needs to happen with the Mikdash. So the absence of the Mikdash would make sense that you wouldn't eat a b'chor in Yerushalayim. Maaser Sheni doesn't require any of those trappings, any processing in the Mikdash, so maybe it should be able to be eaten in Yerushalayim today. Where it says, Bikurim Yochichu, proven from Bikurim. Bikurim are brought up to the Beit HaMikdash, up to Yerushalayim, and they don't have any processing on the Mizbeach. There's no Dam, there's no Emurim, and yet they still do not get processed. We do not bring Bikurim when there is no Beit HaMikdash. So too, Maaser Sheni, we shouldn't bring when there's no Beit HaMikdash. It says, Mala Bikurim, Shkein Tunim, Hanacha. Wait a minute. Bikurim, even though they don't require Dam, Emurim, and the Mizbeach, they require a placement down. You give it to the Kohen brings it to the corner of the Mizbeach and places it down, Lifnei Hashem. Therefore, maybe the Bikurim are tied into the Mikdash. Even though they don't go in the Mizbeach, they still require a placement with Lifnei Hashem next to the Mizbeach. That placement, again, would require a Beit HaMikdash. Without a Beit HaMikdash, you can't bring Bikurim. So maybe Bechor is disqualified because it requires Mizbeach. Bikurim are disqualified because they require Hanachal Lifnei Hashem. But Maaser Sheni, which requires none of that, maybe it should be okay to bring it today and eat it in Yerushalayim. Tomaloma, so the Pasuk says, in Devarim, Ve'veitim Shem Alotechem, Ve'zivtechem, Ve'etmasrotechem, Ve'etshumatiyotchem, Ve'nidrechem, Ve'nidbotechem, U'bechorot Ve'charchem, Ve'tzonachem. So you see Masrot and Bechorot mentioned in the same Pasuk, and that's the Hekesh to tell you, to make each Maser the Bechor, Maaser Sheni has a Hekesh to Bechor, Ma Bechor Yino Lebifnei Abayit, just like Bechor is only relevant when there is a Beit HaMikdash, Af Maser Yino Lebifnei Abayit. So to Maaser Sheni is only relevant to be brought up to Yerushalayim when there is a Beit HaMikdash. And therefore there's a Hekesh between all of these items to say they all have the same din. And just like Bikurim and Bechor are disqualified, so too, Maaser Sheni is disqualified when the Beit HaMikdash is no longer extant. Mari asks the question, it's a little strange, but asks the question, why did the Gemara just say, try from Bechor, didn't work. Try from Bikurim, didn't work. The Braita never brings the possibility of learning it from both of them together. Bikurim and Bechor, which is a Matzad. Why don't we learn it from a Matzad instead of from the Hekesh? Now, truthfully, the Hekesh is a stronger form of Limud than a Matzad, but nevertheless, the Gemara says, you're already doing that. You were trying to do it from Bechor alone, trying to do it from Bikurim alone. Why didn't you try to do it from both of them together? Mishum de'ikal ha'mifrach, the answer is that they have a common denominator, which doesn't exist, but Maaser Sheni, seems obvious. Malatzad Shavesh, Ben Shein Kesh, Ben Tzad Mizbeach. Both of them require Mizbeach. The Bechor requires Mizbeach for the Damim and the Akhtarat Emurim. And the Bikurim require Mizbeach for the placement down next to the Mizbeach, the Hanacha. So if they both require Mizbeach, maybe that's why when there's no Beit HaMikdash, they're both out of service, or we can't do them. But Maaser Sheni, which doesn't have that requirement, maybe it still would be applicable during the time when there's no Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, we need a Hekesh from the Pasuk in Dvarim Yud Bet to tell us this din that the Maaser Sheni has the same din as the Bechor. And that when the Beit HaMikdash is not extant, then you cannot bring up Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim. Now the Gemara is going to test this assumption because, so now the Gemara wants to tackle and understand, why is it so obvious to the Gemara that Bechor, post the Mikdash, is not relevant to be brought up to Yerushalayim, yet Maaser Sheni, they don't know. Aren't the two of them connected to the same question, which is Yerushalayim Kadosh, or is Yerushalayim not Kadosh? Why should it be that one of them is obvious and one of them is not obvious? Now, we're going to follow the Gemara now. This is the Girsa of Rashi in the Gemara. We learned this together in Makot as well. And in Makot there, Tosafot changes the Girsa, and so do over here. Says that the Girsa doesn't make sense according to Rashi, which we'll explain why that is. Therefore, he has the exact opposite Girsa in the Gemara. But right now, we'll read it like Rashi, which is, Umay Kasavar, What does the author of this braita think? If he believes that the Kedusha Rishona means in the time of Yoshua, when they came into the land of Israel, they were Makdish, the land gained a level of Kedusha, and that Kedusha remained permanent. So that'd be true both by the land and the Mikdash. Afilo Bechor Nami. Then why can't you bring a Bechor? Based on the Gemara Megillah, both Rashi says it here, as well as the Balei Tosafot, the Gemara says that if you believe that Kedusha can survive the destruction of the Mikdash, that means that you allow for the Hakravat Korbanot even without a Mikdash. So for instance, if you believe that the Kedusha Rishona was permanent in nature, that permanent Kedusha would allow you to come up to Yerushalayim, put up a Mizbeach, and start being Makriv Korbanot. You don't need Klaim, you don't need a Mikdash, you don't need a Mishkan, you just need to put up a Mizbeach, and you can bring the Bechor. So that means that if you believe Kedusha Rishona was permanent, then you should be able to bring a Bechor in Yerushalayim. Why are you saying it's a given that you can't bring the Bechor? Bechor for sure should have been allowed. And then the question about Maaser Sheni is, why do you have a Safek by Maaser Sheni and not a Safek by Bechor? It should be, for sure you can bring a Bechor, and for sure you can bring up Maaser Sheni. Because of our low kitchalati double, if you believe the first Kedusha was not a permanent Kedusha, afilu Bechor namiti boye, then you should also have a question with regards to Bechor. Why is it that you have a question with regards to Maaser Sheni, and you don't have a question about Bechor? So as Rashi notes over here, umi bayile b'maser, and you're asking about maser, whether it's still relevant, ho v'enu tzarich l'bayit, mi mita'achel b'Yerushalayim l'fnei Hashem, karinim be'olo. You're asking us, without a Beit HaMikdash, is that called l'fnei Hashem, or is that not called l'fnei Hashem? So you should have the same question with regards to a Bechor. If the Bechor, is that called l'fnei Hashem or not called l'fnei Hashem? Rashi says, kigon, shekarvu damave murav v'charav habayit. The case where they put the korban on the mizbeach already, then the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And now we're saying, oh, you don't have to eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim, or you can't eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim. How do you know you can't eat the Bechor in Yerushalayim? Maybe you can eat it, l'fnei Hashem, just like you can eat Maaser Sheni, l'fnei Hashem. The same question you have by Maaser Sheni, you should have the same question with regards to the Bechor. The problem with Rashi's explanation is, he's jumping the gun. He's taking something from the next line of the Gemara and explaining the previous line of the Gemara before we have that information. And he's saying the question of the Gemara at this point is, if you have a Bechor that was already processed, can you eat it in Yerushalayim? The Gemara says, oh, it's a given, you can't eat it in Yerushalayim. Well, why? And just like you have a question about Maaser Sheni, when the Mikdash is in there, is that called Bifnei Hashem? So to a Bechor. If it's all processed, the only question is, can you eat it? Maybe it should be called Bifnei Hashem also, even when there's no Beit HaMikdash there. Why is it so obvious to you by Bechor that it doesn't work? But Maaser Sheni, you have a question. It should be just as questionable with regards to the Bechor as well. But he's doing that by picking up the next statement of Ravina. Am Ravina lo katsavar lo kidusha. The case is a case where it was not permanently with Kedusha. What are we doing here? It's a case where the Bechor was processed before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and then the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, but the Basar is still around, and the Kodshim are still around. Can you eat them post the Korban? And we say that the Basar has the same din as the Dam. Ma Damo b'Mizbeach, Af Bisaro b'Mizbeach. Just like the dam goes on the mizbeach, so too the basar has to be eaten when there is a mizbeach. And that comes from the pasuk in Parshat Korach. It says, "Ach b'chor shor, b'chor kesef, o b'chor eitz, lo tifteh kodeshem, et damam tizrok al mizbeach, v'et chalbam taktir yished reach nechoch l'shem." And the pasuk afterwards says, "B'saram yelach, k'chazeh atnufak shok yamin l'chayyeh." So that "u'b'saram yelach" is connected to the previous pasuk, "et damam tizrok," and at Kalbam Takdir. So that connection to those items makes that there's a Hekesh. So there's a correlation between the Basar being eaten and the Damim and the Akhtarat Kalavim as well. All those are correlated and seemingly have a connection to the Mizbeach. V'ati Maaser, v'yolet mi Bechor. And as we stated before in the Braita, Maaser Sheni has the Hekesh to Bechor from the Pasuk in Dvarim Yudbet. That'll tell us that just like Bechor is disqualified without a Mizbeach, so too is Maaser Sheni. Gemara says, how can you do that? How can it be that you have something that's learned by Hekesh, and then it can be learned again by Hekesh? You're not allowed to have a double Hekesh in Kodoshim. That's exactly what you're doing. We're saying Basar learned from the Dam, and then we're saying Maaser Sheni learned from the Basar of the Bechor. That's a double Hekesh. How can that be a limud inside of Kodeshim? So my answer is, Maser Dagan, Chulin, that's not a problem. Maser Sheni, as we've mentioned before, has a din in Chulin. So the Gemara says, Anich Lamandamar Bata Lamed Azlina. That's true if you focus on the destination, on the object which you are learning towards. If that's Chulin, then that's not considered to be a Hekesh Lekesh in Kodeshim, it's a Hekesh and Hekesh in Chulin, which is permitted. It's only a problem in Kodeshim. In Chulin, you can make a Hekesh Lekesh. So if you say that the object of the limud here, the Maisi Sheni, is the focus, then that's fine. You can call it Chulin, and it's only a Hekesh in Chulin. According to one who says we focus on the source of the limud, and that determines whether it's Kodeshim or Chulin, over here, the source is Kodeshim. And both sources are Kodeshim. Both the Dam that teaches to the Basar and the Basar that teaches Maaser Sheni, they're both Kodeshim. That'd be a Hekesh Lekesh in Kodeshim. How are you going to deal with that? My answer is, Dam and Basar Chadamilti. Very difficult answer of the Gemara. The Dam and Basar are one. They're the same thing. Now, obviously, they're not the same thing. What you either have to say is that the Dam and the Basar are both mentioned together in the Psukim as part of the processing of the Korban. Therefore, what happens to the dam is also what happens to the basar. It's not that they're two independent items, they're one item, or that an animal, when it comes to be a korban, comes as a package of basar v'dam. How you process the dam and the basar, they each have their particularities, but it doesn't mean that the basar and dam are considered to be two separate entities. It's one animal that's kodesh, that's brought, and then you split it up based on its component parts, what you need to do with it. But that means the basar and dam, it's not really a hekesh, because they are really one and the same. Or you have to say that Achila Basar is dependent on Zrikat Adam. That's what makes them one. The fact that the Basar requires Zrikat Adam makes it that the two are very highly correlated, or really the same inyan, and you can't separate between the two of them. Alright, now, in terms of dealing with the proof that Rav is trying to bring is from Rabbi Yossi, the Braita that we just brought of Rabbi Yossi that says that the Bechor is disqualified when there is no Mizbeach. And that's what we were looking for. Kodshim Kalim. When there's no Mizbeach, what is the din? The answer here is, Bechor, when there was no Mizbeach, you can't eat it. So now you see that Kodshim Kalim also require Mizbeach, and therefore if Nifkama Mizbeach, not only would Sharia Mincha be disqualified, not only would Kodshim Kodashim be disqualified, even Kodshim Kalim would be disqualified, meaning that you can't eat them because the Mizbeach is not intact, or the Mizbeach is damaged at that time. That's why we brought the Braita. That's number one. Number two is, the way Rashi reads the Braita, first of all, you have a number of issues that arise. The first of which is, Rashi made it clear that there is Kedushat Aretz, even though there's no Kedushat Migdash. Despite the fact that you have Kedushat Aretz and you're Chayav in Maaser Sheni, nevertheless, Yerushalayim is not Kadosh, because we said in the end that Rabbi Yirmiyah believes, the Lom Kasara Lo Kitsha, the Kedushah of Yerushalayim was not permanent, and yet the question is coming up because of the fact that you already brought the Korban and the Mizbeach. But the Yerushalayim itself is not Kadosh. So what you have is a bifurcation between the Aretz, Kedushat Aretz, and Kedushat Yerushalayim. And according to Rashi, Kedushat Aretz will exist in a permanent state, even though Kedushat Yerushalayim does not exist in a permanent state. That goes against most of the positions in Shas with regards to Kedushat Yerushalayim. And that is, Kedushat Yerushalayim, according to most of the opinions of most Tanaim in Shas, is a permanent Kedushah. Because Heter HaBamot disappears. Once Yerushalayim is built, then there is no longer any Heter HaBamot. You're only going to bring Korbanot in Yerushalayim. And that means even post-Korban Yerushalayim, there's no Heter HaBamot. Which would seem to imply that Kedushat Yerushalayim is permanent, not just a temporary Kedushah, or Kedushah that's only relevant when it's extant. So that goes against what we see throughout Shas. And that is the conclusion the Gemara is coming to you, that Rabbi Yirmiyah has taken that position with regards to this Braita, meaning that he's going against the majority of Shas that says that Kedushah Rishonah was permanent with regards to Yerushalayim. That's another problem. And another problem, as we mentioned before, with regards to Rashi, is the fact that he takes the conclusion of the Gemara and then tries to put it, before we got to the conclusion, into the explanation of the Gemara. For all of these reasons, the Balei Tosafot think that Rashi's explanation of the Gemara is forced and is really related to the Girsa that he had, or the Girsa that he put into the Gemara. And if you use a girsa that is just the opposite, the Gemara would read a lot better. That's what Tosfot says. L'chein yira kamo girsata svarim, ikatsavar kidsha afilu mechor nami, ikatsavar lo kidsha afilu maiser nami, v'ochei porich, If it is Kedusha, then a filo bechor nami mishkachala below chomot Yerushalayim or below chomot Azara, k'mosh perish a kuntris, the makrivim avo pishe ain bayit. So they can build a mizbeach, do the zrika d'dam, and eat the basar. If the Kedusha is permanent, then you don't need the building there. Why can't you process the bechor? Why can't you eat the bechor? Below mizbeach, shitole, the inner yachola kriv. Of course you need a mizbeach, but you don't need a whole Yerushalayim, you don't need the walls of Yerushalayim, you don't need the walls of the Mikdash. All you need is a Mizbeach. And therefore you should be able to bring the Korban Bechor. Ve'ika Savar, lo kidsha, and if you believe there is no permanent Kedushat Yerushalayim, therefore you can't put up a Mizbeach. Koshukein Kedushat Yerushalayim. If you can't put up a Mizbeach, then certainly there's no Kedushat Yerushalayim. About Kedushat Aretz Kayemet, but Kedushat Aretz, like Rashi said, is still extant, so therefore you're Chayav in Shemot HaMasrot, but there's no reason to bring up the Maaser to Yerushalayim. The Ein Lo Heter for Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim's Kedusha is Batel. If the Mizbeach can't be put up because Yerushalayim Kedusha is Batel, so too Yerushalayim as a whole is Batel. And there's no purpose in bringing up Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim. And in the end, Amar Ravina, Lo'olam Kasavar Kitcha. Ravina says everybody agrees that there's a permanent Kedusha to Yerushalayim. V'lo Mari Klal B'chovat Hala'ah. It has nothing to do with bringing it up to Yerushalayim. Elev Yecholah Chlo B'zmanazeh. It's not a question if you bring it up to Yerushalayim. It's a question, can you eat it B'zmanazeh? Olo. Yafina Achilat Maser Achilat Bechor. And the answer is, you can't eat Maaser Sheni B'zmanazeh, even though there's Kedusha at Yerushalayim, because of Achilat Bechor. Because Achilat Bechor requires Mizbeach, even though it only requires Mizbeach for the Dam. The Hekesh there teaches you not only for the Dam, but even the Achilat Basar, you require Mizbeach. Af Achilat Maser by Mizbeach. So too, Maaser Sheni requires Mizbeach. Ben Shul Maaser Nechal Bizman Hazeh. And therefore, no Maaser is eating Bizman Hazeh because we don't have a Mizbeach. If you have a Mizbeach and you can eat the Bechor, that'd be fine. If you don't have a Mizbeach, then you can't eat the Bechor. And that's what Ravina says. It's a case where they already brought the Korban prior to the Korban Abayit. And the question is not about the Akravata Korban. The question is about the eating of the Korban in the absence of a Mizbeach. And the answer is, you cannot eat in the absence of Mizbeach. And that has application to Maaser Sheni as well, which means in the absence of Mizbeach, you can't eat Maaser Sheni. Implied in that also is the opposite. If there is a Mizbeach, then you could bring the Bechor, you could eat the Bechor, and you could bring up Maaser Sheni. You don't need the whole Mikdash, you just need the Mizbeach in order to restart things. And that's based on what we said before, that the Tzad that believes that Kedusha is permanent, as soon as you have a Mizbeach, then you can go ahead and process the Korban and eat the Korban and eat the Maaser Sheni. Bavli Tosfot parse away some of these issues. The first of which is, Yerushalayim does not need to have permanent Kedusha in order for there to be Yisra Bamot. What the Bavli Tosfot prove all the way at the end is a very, very large Tosfot, a very, very fundamental Bavli Tosfot, because that's very large ramifications to our practices today, which is number one, the fact that there's an Yisra Bamot comes out, we'll see later in the Masechta, from the fact that it says, Ki lo vatem ata ela menucha ve'ela nachala. And over there, the interpretation of what the words menucha and nachala mean tell you as to whether there is a permanent blocking of Yisra Bamot. That pasuk is the source for the Yisra Bamot, even though there's no Kedushat Yerushalayim. It separates the issues and says, just because there's an Yisra Bamot, doesn't mean that the Kedushat Yerushalayim is permanent. That's number one. Number two is, the Bavli Tosafot affirm Rashi's position over here, that you could separate between Kedushat Yerushalayim and Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. And that means in both directions. The Rambam is very clear that he thinks that Kedushat Yerushalayim was permanent, but Kedushat Eretz was not permanent. The exact opposite of what Rashi said over here. Kedushat Yerushalayim in the time of Yeshua became a permanent Kedusha. Kedushat Eretz was a temporary Kedusha. In the time of Ezra, they made that Kedushat Eretz permanent. So the Rambam has just the opposite. He thinks that the Kedushat Yerushalayim survives, whereas the Kedushat Haaretz is B'teila. Rashi said the Kedushat Haaretz is not B'teila. Kedushat Yerushalayim is B'teila. Just the opposite. And the Bavli Tosfot bring a similar shita as Rashi over here, although they bring the opposite shita like the Rambam. So the Bavli Tosfot entertain both possibilities. The possibility that Yerushalayim is Kadosh and Eretz Yisrael is not Kadosh, or the possibility that Eretz Yisrael is Kadosh and Yerushalayim is not Kadosh. And then they obviously have the third possibility, which is both of them are connected, and they're both Kadosh, or they're both not Kadosh. Brings all three of those permutations in this large Tosafot. The one thing he makes clear is that you can't separate Kedushat Mikdash from Kedushat Yerushalayim. If Yerushalayim is Kadosh, that's because the Mikdash is Kadosh, and if the Mikdash is not there, then Yerushalayim can't be Kadosh. You can't have it that Yerushalayim maintains its kedusha and you can eat Maaser Sheni there, but the Mikdash is not kadosh even though it's not there. That just can't be the case because Yerushalayim's kedusha derives from the Mikdash and it's not a separate kedusha in and of itself. And for that reason, if you believe that the Mikdash, since kedusha is gone, you also believe Yerushalayim's kedusha is gone and vice versa. You think the kedusha of the Mikdash is permanent, you think that the kedusha of Yerushalayim is permanent. Now, these have major ramifications with a number of halachot. Just do a couple of them. First one is Aliyah Har HaBayit, the ability to go on to Har HaBayit today. Do we say that the kedusha is permanent? If the kedusha is permanent, then you run into problems of going up to Har HaBayit, because you have kedusha to Mikdash, and then you have to contend with, if you're Tameh, if you have some other disqualification, are you allowed to go on Har HaBayit, and where are you allowed to go on Har HaBayit and into the areas of the Mikdash? If you believe that the kedusha of Yerushalayim or the Mikdash was wiped out at the time of the destruction, then you would no longer have this question as to whether you can go up to the Mikdash. It doesn't have kedusha. That seemingly is the view of the Ravid, who argues on the Rambam with regards to Kedushat Yerushalayim, as well as there's a Meiri that we noted in the Gemara in Shavuot that says that you can go up to Har HaBayit without any problem because there's no longer Kedusha. Kedusha wasn't permanent. There's no Kedusha. You can go up there. There's no punishment. There's no Kedusha. There's no Isser of entering the area Bitumah. So that's one big nafkamina as to whether you think the Kedushat Yerushalayim is permanent or that it was lost at the time of the destruction. The same thing is true with the Kedushat Haaretz. Whether Kedushat Haaretz is permanent or not has large implications with regards to whether mitzvot atzluyot baaretz are a din d'oraita or a din d'rabbanan. If you believe the Kedushat is betela, then everything we do today, bizman hazeh, is only a din d'rabbanan. We bring mafrish, trumot, masrot, all these things meet d'rabbanan because the Kedushat Haaretz was betela. If you believe that Kedushat Haaretz is permanent, then those mitzvot become mitzvot d'oraita. Despite that fact, even though the Kedushat Haaretz might be permanent, the Rambam indicates that there may be other reasons why you are not chayav in these mitzvot midoraita, because there might be other qualifications, including that Rov Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, that the majority of the Jewish population needs to be in Eretz Yisrael. There might be other qualifications that make it that the Kedushat Haaretz, even though it's doraita today, still may not have implications in terms of a doraita level. It may still be only the Rabbanan. That's clearly the view of the Rambam. But there are other Rishonim, like the Ravid, who seem to think that the two are connected. If there is Kedusha, then it's going to be Doraita. If there's no Kedusha, it'll be Derabbanan, and you can't have it be Doraita and then have it mitzvah Derabbanan. But that's the view of the Rambam. So this is implications today, the way that we practice. In general, we consider Kedushat Haaretz, even though it's permanent, not to create Chiyuvim Doraita with regards to Trumot Masrot and Shvi'it. All those we practice today as if they are Derabbanan, relying both on the fact that the Ravid believes Kedushat Haaretz was betela, and therefore there's no Kedusha at all, as well as on the Rambam, who says that Kedushat Haaretz, even though maybe Doraita and it's still permanent, that may not impact on these items because they have other qualifications which aren't intact yet, and therefore the Kedushat Haaretz being Doraita is not impacting on Trumot Masrot, Shvi'it, which have another threshold which we haven't crossed yet to make them into Doraita. So the last thing the Baal Tosfot do is flip the gears over here. Part of their flipping the gears is the statement of Rabban Ravina. Ravina's statement in the end is not lo'olam kasavar lo kidsha, rather lo'olam kasavar kidsha. In the end, he believes that it was a permanent kedusha that was placed over here, because then it would align with what we find in opinions throughout Shas, that kedusha at Yerushalayim is permanent, and therefore Ravina would be then in concert with that majority view through Shas, so it makes it easier from that standpoint. As well as the reading of the Gemara is now easier because you don't have to do what Rashi did, was jump the gun and move what was a maskana ta Gemara into the Havamina when the Gemara never mentioned that as part of the Havamina. Right, that's a little insight into the issues of Kedushat Haaretz. Neder, I'll send out the Mikorot for that, as well as the Rasalavechik Zatzal's explanation of the Rambam Shita, which is somewhat unusual with regards to Yerushalayim and Kedushat Haaretz, and how he deals with that issue. So now the Gemara continues and says, Kisalik Ravin, Amar Lashmaita Kameda Rabbi Yirmiyah. When Ravin went up to Eretz Yisrael, he repeated this whole idea of Abaye, bringing proof to the fact that Kodshim Kalim are affected by the lack of Mizbeach, that Rabbi Yossi's opinion with regards to Kodshim Kalim influenced the fact that Kodshim Kalim, without a Mizbeach, also cannot be eaten. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar, Bavlai Tipshai, you foolish Babylonians, Emtol diyate b'harach hashocha, I would come to the conclusion, I take a shua, the fact that you live in the dark land, Amr Shmaita Tad Mechashcha, you guys say these dark words, meaning that you'd say things over that make no sense because you live in a land that's all dark and doesn't have any clarity to it. Lo Shmilu, huh? What about this Brita, the Tanya? B'shat Siluk Masa'ot. When the Ibn Yisrael and the Midbar begin to travel, Kodshim Nifsalim. The Kodshim go automatically expire. But nevertheless, Mitzora and Zav, Mitzora has to be sent out of Machane Yisrael, out of the Machane completely. Zav has to be outside of Machane Shekhinah, Machane Leviyah, can't be in Machane Yisrael. Nevertheless, they are still sent out. So Rashi believes from the Braita that Kodshim and Nisalim, because of the lack of Mizbeach, and not because of the lack of Mechitza. And therefore, despite the fact that there is no Chatzer Ol Moed, Kodshe Kodeshim would have been able to be eaten, based on the Gemara here, that there is no Mechitza the Kedusha, because we see that the Zavim and Mitzuraim are thrown out of the Machaneh, despite the fact that there are no Mechitzot, and that the Machaneh is not intact. From that, Rashi wants to conclude that the Mizbeach has an impact both on Kodshe Kodeshim and on Kodshe Kodeshim. And as long as Mizbeach is there, you can eat the Kodshe Kodeshim, and you can eat the Kodshim Kalim despite the fact that we are moving around. Because the fact that the Mitzoraim and Zavim have to be sent out of the Machaneh shows you that the Machaneh Yisrael is still intact even though they are traveling. Even though now they've disassembled the Mishkan and they're going to travel, nevertheless, there's still a requirement that the Tmeim be sent out. That means that the Kedushah of the Machaneh still exists even when it is in a travel mode. Though the Balei Tosafot say that but Rashi says the Gabe Kodshim Kalim is true because the Mitzoraim and the Zavim are a testament to the fact that the Machane Yisrael is still intact. And therefore you can eat Kodshim Kalim even when you're moving. But the guard state Kodshe Kodeshim, you have no proof from here because Kodshe Kodeshim, according to Balei Tosafot, require a Kalea Chatzer. And just because the Mitzora or Zav is thrown out, doesn't show you anything with regards to the Kodshe Kodeshim. And then Tani Yidach, we have another bride that says, B'shnei Mikomot Kodshim Nechalim. In two different places, Kodshim are allowed to be eaten. Sounds like when you move, you can still eat the Kodeshim. The first bride that says, as soon as you move, you go to the Masa, disqualified, no longer valid to eat the Kodeshim. Second bride that says, oh, you can eat the Kodeshim here, you can eat them there. When you're moving, it's not a problem. My love, what would be the distinction between these two brides? How would we reconcile them? Ha b'kodshei kodeshim, ha b'kodshim kalim. Kodshei kodeshim, as soon as you pick up the mizbech, they will become disqualified, and you'll no longer be able to eat them. Kodshim kalim would then still be able to be eaten, not only here, but along your travels. And that would undermine what Abayi brought in the name of Rabbi Yossi, that kodshim kalim, they are connected to the mizbech, and the lack of mizbech would make it that you can't eat it. That's not true over here. Here you're traveling, the Mizbeach is disassembled, being carried away, and yet you're still allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim. So that would be a disproof, or against, Abaye's conclusion from what we learned from Rabbi Yossi in the Braita. Now obviously Rabbi Yossi says it in the Braita, but what you have to say is that Rabbi Yossi's din is uniquely associated with Bechor, it's not a broader din by Kodshim Kalim. As opposed to Abaye, who's viewing Rabbi Yossi's din by Bechor to be applicable to all Kodshim Kalim, over here, Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying that din of Rabbi Yossi is uniquely associated with Bechor. Otherwise, Kodshim Kalim are not affected by Mizbeach, and you can eat them in multiple locations. Gemara says, Amaravina, Idi V'Idi B'Kodshei Kalim. Both of the brightos are speaking about Kodshei Kalim. Below Kasha, then how are you going to reconcile them? Ha Rabbi Ishmael, Ha Rabbonon. The difference between them is whether this was authored by Rabbi Ishmael or authored by the Rabbonon. Rabbi Ishmael, who Rabbi Yossi quotes as being the author of that Braita by Bechor, he believed, just like Bechor cannot be eaten without the Mizbeach, so do all Kodshei Kalim cannot be eaten when there is no Mizbeach. The Rabbanan disagree and say that that's uniquely associated with Bechor, or they can disagree with Rabbi Ishmael's Hekesh between the Basar and the Dam, and therefore say that even though the Dam requires Mizbeach, Basar does not require Mizbeach. And in that way, the Rabbanan have an opinion that Kodshim Kalim do not require Mizbeach. Either they think that entirely in Kodshim Kalim, including Bechor, or they could say that in Bechor it's true, but not true or extrapolated to other Kodshim Kalim. So the second Braita would be authored by the Chachamim, where it says that Kodshim Kalim can be eaten in multiple places. The first brayta will be altered by Rabbi Shmuel. It says that kodshim kalim, it, with the absence of mizbeach, are disqualified and cannot be eaten. Both the brayta are speaking about kodshei kodoshim. My bishnei mikomot. So what does it mean? You can eat it in two places. Kodoshim ito elevim et the mishkan. Before Levim assembled the Mishkan, or after the Levim disassembled the Mishkan, what would I have thought? If Salahu be Yotze, that would be classified as Yotze, Kamash Malan, that it is not considered to be Yotze. Why isn't it considered to be Yotze? You disassembled the Mishkan, why shouldn't it be considered Yotze as soon as you do that? Because now you don't have the boundaries to demarcate where you're allowed to eat the item, and therefore it should be a failure in Yotze. Because the Pasuk says, Amakra, Nasa Oel Moed, that the Oel Moed will travel, Avapish Nasa Oel Moedu. Even though it's moving, it's traveling, it's still classified as an Oel Moed. For that reason, you can eat the Kodshei Kodashim, but it depends on when. Now Rashi over here takes issue with the Girsat HaGemara, because it gives two examples. It says, before the Levim assembled the Mishkan, and after the Levim disassembled the Mishkan. And so what Rashi points out is that the order in which they did these things, based on the Masa'ot, that Gershon and Merari were two Masa'ot, the head of Kahat, that means when they came to assemble the Mishkan, they first assembled the Mishkan, and then they brought the Kelim in afterwards. Which means you're never going to have a time period where the Mizbeach is there, but the Mishkan is not yet built. And even if you want to say, in this instance, they did it backwards, and they put up the Kelim before they put up the Mishkan. Let's say that happened. He says, you still have a problem, because you can't bring a Korban unless there's Petach Ol Moed. So if you don't have the Ol Moed, and you only have the Mizbeach, you can't do it, Lifnei Hashem, you can't do it, Lifnei Petach Ol Moed. And for that reason, Rashi says, that possibility of it being prior to the assembly of the Mishkan doesn't make sense. Both for the reason that's not the order of how it was done. Number two, if you did it out of order, it's still problematic because you can't check the Korban before the Petach Ol Moed exists. So Rashi says, if you do have that Girsa, what you'd have to answer is that Petach Ol Moed is only a demand by Shlamim. It's not a demand by other Korbanot. Even though Rashi originally assumed that whatever's true by the Shlamim is true by other Korbanot from the Hekesh. And therefore, if a Shlamim requires Petach Ol Moed and requires it to be open and present, so too by other Korbanot, that would be the case. And that's why, according to Rashi, scenario can't be in the assembly of the Mishkan. It is a relevant question with the disassembly of the Mishkan, because there you could have them take the parts of the Mishkan down because they travel first, and the Kelim would still be there. And therefore, for Rashi, that's what the Gemara is speaking about, whether it was prior to the removal of the Mizbeach or after the removal of Mizbeach. It's assuming that they already disassembled the Mishkan, the Mizbeach is still there. And then the Mizbeach eventually is taken away. The difference in the Braita will be exactly that. If it's before the Mizbeach is taken away, it still has a din of Ol Moed, even though the Mishkan has already been disassembled. On the other hand, once the Mizbeach is gone, then everybody agrees that you can no longer eat the Kodshei Kodashim over there, because the Mizbeach is no longer in its place. Now you would think that you're Pasul B'Yotze when you disassemble the Mishkan, even though the Mizbeach is there. That we said, Benasa Ol Moed. Even though the Ol Moed is traveling, it still gives a shame Ol Moed to the location of the Kelim. So according to Rashi, again, Lashita Tov before, even after the Mishkan is disassembled, the Kalachei HaChatzer are gone, but the Mizbeach is still there, you do have permission to eat the Kodshei Kodoshim. As soon as the Mizbeach is moved, then you can't eat the Kodshei Kodoshim. So the Shnei Mikomom, according to Rashi, is one when the Mishkan and the Mizbeach and everything is intact. That's one makom. The second makom for the Kodshei Kodashim is when you've taken away the Mishkan, when you've taken away all the trappings around it and leave just the Mizbeach. There's permissibility to eat the Kodshei Kodashim. And that is Rashi, the Shitato, who says that the Kodshei Kodashim only need Mizbeach. They do not need Kalei HaChatzer. On the other hand, as we discussed before, the Baal Tosafot require Kalei HaChatzer in order for there to be a Chatzer Ol Moed. And without that, you can't eat the Kodshei Kodashim. And therefore, the Balei Tosfot, the Shnei Mikomot, are when the Mishkan is completely assembled, everything is there. And the other case is in the case where everything's disassembled, but the Kalei HaChatzer and the Mizbeach are still there. The Balei Tosfot say, well, what's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is that even though the Mishkan is gone,
If you have the Mizbech and the Kalei HaChatzer, you can still eat the Kodshei Kodashim. So according to Rashi, the Ibaitema of Halal, the Kodshei Kodashim, is even in a case where the Kalei HaChatzer are gone. And yet the Mizbech is still there, that would allow you to eat Kodshei Kodashim. But the Bali Tosafot, it's only if the Mizbech and the Kalei HaChatzer are still there, even though the Mishkan has been taken away, you can still eat Kodshei Kodashim, and that would be the explanation of the Braita that is Matir, the eating of the Kodshei Kodashim in two locations. As the Braita that says you can't eat the Kodshei Kodashim is, according to Bali Tosafot, once the Kalei HaChatzer are gone. According to Rashi, once the Mizbeach is taken away, then you can't, according to everyone, eat Kodshei Kodashim. All right, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Samach Aleph Amud Bet.